This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome. Good night. Welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer-Cartwright. Thank you for joining us this Tuesday evening at our new time, 6:30 p.m. on Guardian Radio 96.9. Thank you, all of you, for listening. And those of you who have not been with us before, because we used to be at 7:30, we're now in the 6:30 spot. I just want to thank you for tuning into the show. We do all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. So we have an interesting mix of things that we do. Sometimes we have guests. Sometimes we talk about topics. Sometimes we open the lines for questions. And tonight is going to be kind of one of those nights. I wanted it to be kind of open tonight. So we will be opening the lines for any questions or comments on different topics. And so I'm Dr. G. Archer. I'm a family medicine specialist. All things family medicine, general practice, and a variety of other things. Tonight's show, of course, is brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health care needs. We're located in Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center, and we do family practice, everything from babies, children, adults, geriatrics. We also do home care, IV vitamin therapy, microneedling, and we're going to be starting our Botox program very, very soon. So if you want to know more about that, you want to check us out online at Medical Concierge Services. Also, we're on Instagram, medical_concierge_services. And our own website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. That's mcsfamilymedicine.com. If you want to give us a call, it's 326-1521. And our WhatsApp line is 4324010. And you can use that to call in to join NHI or to book an appointment, whatever is more easier for you to come in or use one of our many means of contacting us. So you can find all of that on our various sites. So yeah, quite an interesting few days, especially for the medical community. We've seen some really strange things happening. And I was going to talk a little bit more, kind of a second part to our topic last week, where we talked about respiratory viruses. And I'll still probably get into that in the second half of the show. I was going to talk about just kind of things that we do, because this is kind of like cough and cold season. And we know that respiratory viruses are still very high up there with the children. And so things that we kind of look at. And so we'll look at that a little bit later. But want to touch on a few things that seem to be happening within our medical community and everything that's happening. We would have seen today that the pharmacies were closed for a good portion of the day, if not all the day. They were having a few issues. And so they were trying to get the attention of the people in charge, I guess, to kind of go back on these rate limiting policies that were being put in place. And we're seeing this type of policy kind of widespread lately in different areas, mostly in healthcare. And also we see it in the retail spaces, price control issues and stuff like that. And it may seem on the surface like this is all, hey, why are these people complaining about that? But I had to really take a good look and thought about this, because I even looked at how all of this is affecting the medical industry, and we'll get into that. But It's very difficult if you aren't an entrepreneur or a business owner to really know the intricacies of what it is to be in business. And the cost of running a business in this country is extremely high. You cannot tell your employees that you didn't make enough money this month. That money has to be in place. And it's been difficult running businesses today because it's just the cost of doing business, overhead. We know that electricity is going up. You've got water, you've got utilities, you've got VAT everywhere. So just running a business is just extremely costly. And we're seeing that cost go up and up and up exponentially. So I don't know if this was a great time to tell people to slash their costs in terms of what they charge when they themselves are incurring more cost. We really have to look at taking more balanced approach to policy. And if this is something coming from the government, then maybe looking at how they can balance things off by removing certain taxes or fees that would help that cost to go down across the board. It's a very difficult time, and there's inflation across the world. And we have to play this just right, or we're going to end up in a position where companies are going to say it's just not worth it, and that's jobs. So we can't just think of it from a consumer point of view. We also have to consider the employer and the business itself. So hopefully they will resolve those issues. But to point out that that was indeed happening. Then, of course, we see a similar thing happening with the food stores and the retailers also having a similar issue, requesting more time to kind of look at this and how they can find some middle ground. And I've been able to talk to a few people in this industry, and they are very, very concerned for their well-being and their long-term outlook in the industry. I heard about some people not bringing in certain goods because it's just not going to be profitable anymore. So that's going to reduce access to food and certain items. And then others who are just really concerned about how they're going to make it on their day-to-day, because not just large businesses are affected by these policies, but also small businesses are affected by these policies. And small businesses usually work on very small margins. And if you were to squeeze them, they don't have the cushion as some maybe larger organizations. So when I see policies like this, I think about who is going to benefit from smaller companies or smaller portions of the industry failing, or who would benefit if a part of the sector no longer can compete. And we have to think about those things when we look at policy, because they don't just affect maybe who we want it to affect, but it goes across the board. And so it is a very detailed and complex manner, and it requires proper consultation. And obviously everyone involved is not pleased. We have a similar issue that we're gonna touch on before we move into our main topic with the doctor. So I went to actually read an article that was in the paper by one of our local doctors. He kind of touched on this in one of the local papers. And so they did an article on what's going on in the medical field. And so people aren't aware that there are some amendments that are going on to the NHI Act, and just looking at how that would affect both private care and healthcare. And so I'm gonna go through and read this article. If you have any questions or concerns, we can go over it, and it will go into our main topic. So the name of the article is called "Don't Crash Private Healthcare with NHI." And so you all know that I'm a part of NHI, and I think NHI is a really great thing. People are concerned about the direction of some new policies and how it will affect healthcare in the long term. And so the point of this is not that NHI is a problem. It actually creates access to a lot of people who may not have been able to get access to quality care in the past. So it is a good scheme. The direction of some of the most recent policy being proposed is being questioned by a lot of the medical fraternity and community, because we do see that there can be negative effects. And that's why we have these conversations, so that we can find the best solution moving forward, because our goal is to have a better Bahamas, a healthier Bahamas, and have healthcare that is accessible and affordable, and not just accessible and affordable, but a good quality of healthcare, because you don't want to just provide something for providing its sake. You want to provide people with really good healthcare because it's important. It's the lives of people. So this article by Neil Hartnell was in the Tribune, actually. And it starts off with, okay, for some reason that's gone up there. All right. A prominent doctor, my article keeps bouncing all over the place. A prominent doctor has warned the government that its proposed national health insurance reforms must not crash private healthcare and suffocate the innovation and investment that drives improved medical care. Dr. Convo Brown, principal of the Bahamas Heart Center, Cancer Center Bahamas, and Medical Pavilion Bahamas, told the Tribune Business that the Davis administration needs to balance its push for universal health care via NHI with maintaining an environment in which private health practitioners can flourish, since they are the ones that drive medical innovation, basically. Innovation and advances, especially in tertiary care and complex surgeries. He spoke out after the government last week tabled the National Health Insurance Bill 2022 in the House of Assembly. And so this is interesting that this bill was actually tabled when discussions about this bill and the contents of this bill really just came out. So it's really interesting that it's already tabled. The legislation, which will repeal the existing NHI Act 2016, was described to this newspaper by one doctor speaking on condition of anonymity. On a condition of anonymity as the next step in the government's stealth takeover of the healthcare industry, since it seeks to introduce price controls similar to those currently rolled out with the food and pharmaceutical industry. So we see a very similar type of legislation coming out that we're seeing in the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry being introduced into to the medical field. So it's almost like a theme of policies that seem to be coming out. So I'm thinking that there is some a plan or something that they're trying to achieve, but it's the same thinking style that you would squeeze the business owner or the private contractor, and they would then absorb the cost rather than our actual government absorbing the cost. The bill seeks to ensure that all Bahamians and qualified residents have access to a minimum level of healthcare known as the standard health benefit, which includes primary healthcare services, diagnostic imaging, screening programs for cancer, and other specific conditions among the services offered. However, it also seeks to dictate the premium prices that insurers can charge for the standard health benefit and the fees received by doctors. So part of this concept sounds really good. We're going to expand this whole NHI model, and you know, people are going to get greater coverage. But then it seems like in consideration of covering this cost, it is actually the healthcare providers that are going to end up having to pay for this in a sense. It's Section 7 entitled Powers of Authority stipulates that the NHI authority and the regulatory body charged with overseeing the scheme has the power to fix fee schedules and payment rates for standard health benefit providers. And the same section states that the authority can also regulate the maximum price by approved insurers' benefits rendered under the standard health benefit, which lends now into involvement into the insurance business, which is a very interesting approach. And originally, if you know the history of NHI, which I'm very versed in because I was quite involved in the early introduction and how they kind of went about looking at NHI, they did try to introduce this concept of including the insurers, and that did not go well. We all know that there was a lot of fallout from the insurers during this point in time, and they basically rejected what was being proposed for them because it would mean that the government be regulating their fees and kind of creating almost a one-tier system in which there was only one way to get into the healthcare system. And for me, that's a little bit dangerous because I always like choices. I like to have the opportunity to choose which system I would like to go into. And I like the current direction that NHI was going into in terms of allowing access out of the public care system into a more private care system. And those prices are already pretty much regulated. I think it's the spreading of this concept into everything that has people kind of really wondering what this is all about. So the fee schedule payments and the maximum prices were not disclosed on the bill, so it's going to be left up in the air arbitrary to someone. One doctor spoken to by the newspaper yesterday said that these are equivalent to price controls and will have the same effect as those concerning food retailers, wholesalers, and their pharmaceutical counterparts. That of potentially foraying physicians to provide services covered by standard health benefit at a loss if they are set too low. And so that is the concern that will you be able to cover your bills if that's too low? And if everybody has to do that, each company has their own costs to look at. And there's already an issue where some of the larger probably clinics or conglomerates are able to maybe do things that a smaller business would not be able to do. And so it comes back to this idea of the smaller entities really taking the brunt of a lot of these policies. So you have to wonder who is advising on these policies when we can see that maybe big business or certain entities will benefit more than others, or perhaps they're making space for something else that already does not exist. But we don't have all the answers to these questions. And I just thought this article was very interesting because as all of this was coming out, all of this was happening in kind of real time. I'm going to skip a little bit. Okay. They're coming in and telling us, the medical practitioners, what to charge and what our overhead costs are without consulting us. They have never had a word with us. That's what a comment from one of the physicians they spoke to. The government is steadily positioning themselves for a takeover of healthcare systems in the Bahamas, and physicians, pharmacists, allied healthcare professionals, and the insurance industry are going to have this imposed on them if they are not careful and allow them to completely derail the system. Now, there's a comment here from Dr. Dwayne Sands, who's a former minister of health of the Free National Movement, and now he's the chairman, and he told Tribune Business that arbitrarily applied doctors' fees and premiums may have totally unintended consequences if the NHI scheme was not properly thought through. And he warned that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Speaking to the bill, he said there are some concerns that have been raised as to what this means. It certainly will impact the practice options for a number of young physicians in particular. And what they're trying to do is to lock the reimbursement rates for physician encounters or medical encounters, which is fine if they cover the cost. If they don't cover the cost, and we've seen this with the brouhaha with the food industry and the pharmacies, the road to hell is paved, once again, he mentioned, with good intentions for an arbitrary rate applied for whatever good reason may have totally unintended consequences because it doesn't take into account everything required to run a practice and maintain a practice. And that's a very good point because it goes back to what we discussed about not knowing the cost of running a particular business and just kind of giving everyone the same rating system regardless may actually destroy some people's business and way of life. So the cost of shifting that goes on in with what happens in the public sector is not necessarily compatible with what goes on in the private sector. Let's make some progress, but everybody that comes to the table ought to do so with clean hands and to a degree of equanimity. If we preempt because there is a political imperative, so I don't really want to get into the political stuff, so I'll skip that portion of it. But it goes back into statements made by Dr. Brown, who goes on to say it's going to have some challenges with the medical community over the reforms contained in the NHI bill and what it is intending to do. He added that the biggest issue and concerns with Bahamian private health insurers may use the price control standard to basically negotiate down below costs for reimbursement rates for doctors by using this whole thing. And still, agreeing that NHI is very much needed. So the point is not about NHI itself. It's very much needed because access to quality healthcare and outcomes should not depend on whether a person has insurance or the size of their bank account. Dr. Brown argued that it is needed to be designed and implemented in such a way that it did not crowd out or stifle the private healthcare industry, warning that such an outcome would be equivalent to dumbing down the healthcare given, right? So that's an important thing. And we talk about the limitations sometimes of socialized medicine and socialized systems is that it spreads a little over a lot, and then you have inadequacies in those systems. And NHI was almost a relief to that system, where we got out of that system of government controlled spaces and had an entity that was allowed to do things in a more innovative and efficient manner. So why would you cross over the two? Yes, you want to improve both of those systems, but you don't want to do with what we did maybe with schooling in this country. All right. So given that private practitioners drive the sector for innovation and investment, he suggested that you should take a more partnership approach. The NHI system is very much needed, but we have to make sure we don't crash the medical profession. Dr. Brown said, we have to make sure that folks in the private practice are not getting screwed by our system. Pointing to Medicare, that's in the United States. So United Government has a system of Medicare. He talks about the fact that Medicare is able to do quite a few things, especially for persons over the age of 65 years and older, but that includes a scheme involving 50 million people. And that program spreads the risk over all of those people, so making costs more effective. So it's a much larger pool and therefore generating economic scales, something that this program would find difficult to do with our population being so small. It would be hard to achieve those type of efficiencies. And so we have to take the context of our environment into play. Being a smaller communities, we cannot cut and paste what we see other countries doing and just try to implement it here. And that's why we end up with a lot of failed programs. And that's what he's alluding to in the article. He said that nations have to be careful not to design an NHI system modeled on developed countries in the belief that it can emulate their best qualities, pointing out that most if not all healthcare advances, especially at the tertiary care and surgical level, were driven by private sector. He added, if you crash your private sector, you also crash your ability to offer advanced services in any kind of timely manner. So, you know, a lot of times when we have difficulties in the public sector, we go to our private sector and we say, hey, can you help us out? Can we do certain things? So you don't want to totally destroy that. You don't want to destroy that at all. All right. That is where your innovation comes from. That's where your investment comes from. And the government doesn't have the wherewithal to look at all of these things. So if you kill your private sector, you will kill the sophistication as well. You will kill innovation and you will kill investment. So people won't even think about getting into these areas because they are going to say, wow, it's not going to be worth it. Actually, we have a call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Good night.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, wonderful. This is the same kind of argument Sir Lyndon had. And he said on a show about a year or two before he died, the wrongest thing he did, he could remember, is to allow all these, mind you, they can be in the minority grouping, got to his head that he was sorry he did not implement national health insurance. And I'm sure, I know you're reading from the article with Dr. Brown and Dr. Sands, but I'm sure there's other doctors who have a different view. So if I would have had the ears of the prime minister, I would listen to all the views, okay? But this time around, I will go ahead with national health insurance because the nation needs it. You're going to hear these talks.
One thing, ma'am, we already have national health insurance.
I'm saying to you what they're trying to implement. Y'all are saying it. But what I am saying, maybe y'all kind of national health insurance, because if you had that, patients would have been in different situations, because if private doctors, you don't have the money, they ain't touching you. What I am saying, if I had the air of the prime minister, I would let him listen, but the minority always think they talking for the nation, and they talking for all doctors. And I'm quite sure different doctors, just like Dr. Brown and Sands, have different views. That's their opinion. This time, the country really needs national health insurance. That's you say we have it?
We do have it.
I think about 80% would not agree with you. Because people are
tired. There's an entire entity called National Health Insurance.
These private doctors. Probably your kind of national health insurance. I don't think they talk about your kind. The entire nation. What I'm saying to you, people who feel it, know it. So Dr. Brown them or Dr. Sands them and the minority or whatever, they could afford to sit back and talk. But if you don't have the money, they don't touch you. Good night.
All right. Thank you, caller. The only thing I was trying to explain to the caller is, first of all, she was a little confused because we do have national health insurance. We do have the initiative. It's been going on for quite some time. So national health insurance exists. The form it is in is focused on primary care. What the caller probably, if she would listen to me, would have really kind of realized is she's talking about universal health care, which means that the government would cover a lot of other things. If you know anything about the initial beginning or the progress of NHI, you know that it's supposed to be a progressive program in which they start to cover more and more services as can be afforded. The original scheme, if you wanted to move towards universal healthcare, actually had required a tax. The government at one point was considering taxing each and every Bahamian 6%, like NIB, in order to cover some form of national health insurance. And of course, they ended up not doing that because most people cannot afford that. So you would have to be taxing both the poor and the rich because this money has to come from somewhere. What the caller doesn't understand, and I don't think that she maybe was listening so much, sometimes people get more caught up on a particular concept or, you know, I don't know, political or whatever it is. Yes, you have people who are definitely in need of better health care and access to health care. How do we do that? We need to determine how to do that without destroying the healthcare industry. It has to be a balanced approach, and that's what they're being said. Now, maybe because I mentioned Dr. Sands' name, I didn't want to get political, but he was in the article. And so I just kind of mentioned his comment as well, but I'm not directing it anyway to be either an FNM or a PLP approach because NHI actually started under the PLP government. The FNM kind of continued it. And now again, we're under the PLP government. So I don't think that this is a political issue at all. I do think this is a healthcare issue and what direction you want to take because you don't want to lose your physicians. And you don't want people to have different types of access of care, levels of care, different people should not be destroyed so that you can create a one-tier system. That's what really we're discussing here. So it takes a little bit of intellectual capacity to go through the nuances of the different parts of this in order to understand this in a way that we can have a good conversation. So I love the woman's passion, but I would say to her that she should read a little bit more on what's going on and try to understand this from different point of views. And in no way did I see that anyone was saying that they didn't want to eventually have some type of universal healthcare. But we do have to think about how do we get to that goal whilst keeping, you know, the private sector there because that creates competition, it creates innovation, and it gives us space that if our social safety nets or our public system fails, that we do have other alternatives to do that. Nobody wants to be in a one-tier system. And so that would be dangerous for the healthcare of the nations because we can see that there are challenges in our current system. And if we don't, if we're not able to recognize that we have challenges in our current system, we will get ourselves into problems. So caller, I would say really kind of think about those things and kind of consider all of that. I'm not sure if I completely finished the article. We have some comments online before I move on. This is from Citizens for a Better Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Good night, Dr. D. Archer. Why is the government and the pharmaceutical companies playing around with the people's health? I don't know all the details of what's happening with the pharmaceutical companies, right? I don't know if someone from the pharmaceutical companies can enlighten us. But the gist of what I got was that they were telling them that they could only charge within a certain margin of cost. And the pharmaceutical companies didn't feel like that was sufficient for them to continue their services in a manner where they could conduct their business. And they wanted an extension of time to have more discussion with the government. They didn't receive that confirmation of an extension, and the deadline was today. And so I think they felt like they had to get the government's attention because this is their livelihood. And so people can say that they want companies to be altruistic, but at the end of the day, most companies are indeed there to make a profit and to make some money so that they can pay themselves. And by people being able to pay themselves, they're willing to invest more in that particular thing. So, you know, there's another comment, Dr. D, isn't this one of the reasons that we have a sovereign wealth fund? Well, we don't have a functioning sovereign wealth fund. And if there were no adaptations to the last act, well, it's there, but I don't really know what's going on with the sovereign wealth fund, to tell you the truth. But that sovereign wealth fund, if it wasn't changed from the one that I read, it didn't serve the Bahamian people in a manner that was going to be conducive to even opening up that fund. And so I know that a lot of Bahamians are thinking, hey, if we open up a sovereign wealth fund, we should be able to have all these funds to do all these things that would help the country. And so the way that that original sovereign wealth fund was actually written, there wouldn't be very few benefits because the money couldn't really be spent on the things that we needed to be spent on. And so I think they needed another look at that. There were people providing assistance, but somehow I don't know where they're going with that, or if they're rehashing that or whatever like that. So I would have to look into exactly what's happening with the sovereign wealth fund currently. All right. So so I would tell the caller just to kind of read up and kind of understand what we're talking about. So you can do things, and you can do things at an A grade, a B grade, a C grade, a D grade, or an F grade. We have a problem in this country where we think just doing something sometimes is a good idea, but the quality in which we do it isn't that good. You know, it's like a failing grade system where, you know, kids are passing out, but what kind of grades are they getting? So when we encounter to do something that's going to affect the entire country, the nation, the direction of healthcare, you know, that has to be well thought of and well planned. I would say by the time NHI came on board, and I'm very shocked that the caller didn't realize that we actually have NHI, and nor the difference of not universal healthcare, but that's something that she could always look up. So, but when it came on board, it had gone through many iterations in a sense, you know, gone over to a place where most people were kind of comfortable with it happening, and there were certain objectives that were laid out, and there was kind of a course and plan of how this thing would improve and increase. And so it didn't happen really overnight. And this was actually the previous PLP government, because you remember that was quite a lot of talking. I think it was months, maybe a year before people settled on the current NHI scheme, which seemed to be working pretty well, I think. Our clinic does NHI, so we don't have a problem there. But it was working pretty well. So that did not just happen out of the blink of an eye. It went through a lot of process, a lot of consultation, a lot of meetings. I was initially a part of one of the clinical planning teams for family medicine. You know, we sat down, we had various meetings where we went over the clinical implications and what would be needed and stuff like that. So there was a lot going on for quite some time, and a lot of different perspectives. So it wasn't something that just happened out of the blue, and it was really a lot of consultation. I think the government probably was one of the better times of consultation, because it wasn't just like one rush meeting here or here we have this. It was like, okay, this is what we want to do. People were like, nah, I'm not too sure. It went back and forth, the doctors, the insurers, the government. And I would say that at first it seemed frustrating, but to know that at the end of the day, it was something that everybody could look at and feel comfortable with, approved, and really was something revolutionary for the Bahamian people. I think we should all be proud of that in a sense. And so we want to move in that faith. We want to move in the faith of doing something that we can all be proud of, that won't put people out of business, that won't wreck the careers of physicians, won't kill innovation, that will provide the quality healthcare that Bahamians need and deserve, and would increase access rather than to limit access. And so I don't think anyone would agree that limiting access to healthcare is going to help a nation such as ourselves that needs a lot of assistance with our healthcare system. And that's what it's really all about. And so I'm going to finish up this article because I think it's very, very important. And of course, we're going to open the line. I guess I can kind of put out there, if you want to call and make a comment or just ask a question, 322-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. All right. As long as you're polite and not going to make it a political issue, we can discuss this. We have another comment online. This is a long one. Dr. D. Archer, the government of the Bahamas, we believe that they need to change how they do business in the Bahamas. Instead of begging for investment, we need to change our brand to a luxury brand and charge so-called investors to do business here in the Bahamas. We believe that personally, they give away too much free stuff and get so little in return. And yes, I agree with the comment. With the amount of money circulating in the population in terms of investments, foreign businesses, and even just foreign residents, I think a lot more can be done to keep money into the country and divert some of that money to things that are need for the Bahamian people, such as investments in healthcare. I had talked years ago about a plan to raise $1 billion for healthcare. And I was told at the time, I won't tell you who said this to me, but they said, you know, we don't really need that. We've got it covered. But here we are kind of always stretched when it comes to something as important as healthcare, when those funds could be raised inside of this community because we do have a lot of wealth here. It may be in certain pockets, but with the reach of the government and our leaders, I do think that we need to diversify how we acquire funding for a lot of things. And we need an altruistic government that's going to just kind of do what they need to do for the people without anything else going on. And so that's going to be extremely important. But I think the money is here. I think there are ways of getting it from our investors, from our residents, from different people, and not by taxation, but just by helping them to be good corporate citizens, as well as, good community members and making them a part of the community in the sense. The other comment was, why are they holding the idea back of having a national lottery? I'm not sure. That, of course, again, that goes into the politics. I personally don't gamble. I don't do any kind of lottery stuff. So I'm not really keen on that, but if they want to go ahead, if that's a way for them to raise funds, it's something to think about. But then, of course, we have to understand that people kind of do things based on what makes sense from their perspective. And so we have some of those industries that have, I guess, a lot of push or pull with our leadership. And so that's a difficult one. And that's a problem that we have in this country with basically all different areas, is that instead of sometimes doing the best thing, we kind of, it's done what's best for maybe the people who are closest to the persons in charge. So I have no idea why we haven't gone that road. I personally don't care for lotteries and gambling or any of that stuff. But I think it's actually more palatable for everyone to go with a lottery system. And I hear people talk about it all the time. So it wouldn't be something that Bahamians would be really outraged with at all. The other comment, in the state, national lottery pays for a lot of these problems that we are having. So yes, that is one of the solutions and probably should be in the part of things of raising money. And that's why I said, you know, there are a lot of ways to solve these problems. For some reason, we don't like simple solutions to problems. And I always have to wonder when the solution is complicated or extremely complex, what is the thinking behind it, who's proposing it, and for what long-term goal? Because a lot of problems are easily fixed by simple solutions, right? We're always told, you know, going from A to B is much simpler than going all around the block. So why not take simple solutions, put them into play? And sometimes they can fix very complex situations if you would look at it that way. But by finding these really complicated things, you know, we don't know whose toes are being stepped on or who's giving what advice. And that tends to be what kind of happens there. All right. So just going to end with the last part of this article. And remember, everybody, these are not my words. I'm reading from the article itself. So don't try to bash Dr. D. I just wanted to bring this up so people can have an idea and a context that this is kind of happening in different areas. Pointing out that most of not all healthcare advances, especially tertiary care, surgical level, were driven by private care. You don't want to crash the private care sector. We talked about that part. And if you kill the private sector, you will kill the sophistication as well. So turning to a more partner-centered approach, this was his advice, really. You know, people, you know, using more partnerships with the private community rather than just kind of doing something and then asking the private community to get involved is kind of the model that is being pushed. We're here to take care of the people, and that's my goal. I don't put it on anyone else. The government system lags behind contemporary developments and gets overwhelmed. It ain't the most efficient system, which is why the UK NHS is in the paper every day. And so the article ends where they talk about the National Health Services in the United Kingdom and the fact that it has a lot of challenges and their system is kind of all encompassing kind of universal healthcare. And universal healthcare can be tricky if it's not done properly. Probably one of the better models would be Canada and maybe some of the European countries. But that also is a cultural component to it. And that kind of organically led to that way because of their societies. They also don't have the high level of, you know, chronic diseases that we do. And so I think, and we discussed this with the initiation of NHI, that one of the most important parts of an NHI or going into a universal healthcare system is to first have a really good primary care foundation and to have national programs in where you educate and re-educate the nation on health, because you want to cut this kind of upgoing chart of people that are being extremely sick, because it's going to be difficult to afford that level of health care if 60% of your population, 40% of your population has chronic non-communicable diseases. It's going to be extremely expensive, especially for such a small country, as mentioned in the article. That burden is not spread amongst a lot of people. We're talking about a country where they're considering, you know, increasing minimum wage from $2.10 to $2.50 is a very big step. And so where does the money come from? We are the people. We pay for everything and all of these services. So that money comes from you. And when we said 400,000 people, almost 200,000 of that is children. So we're talking possibly of a workforce of 100, 150,000 people. We have the elderly, we've got children, we have those who are on disability, we have those who aren't working. So the workforce is really going to be carrying the burden of all of that. So it has to be planned appropriately. And it has to include all the persons involved on a substantial level. If we don't get to this level of planning, we can go ahead and try to introduce a universal healthcare system and it crashes or it fails. Why not do things properly the first time? Why not put the work into it that is required? Why not get the stakeholders to be excited about your project? You know, doctors running to be a part of this, insurance running to be a part of this. That is the kind of systemic approach that you want to take. You want to take an approach where everyone can be happy and considerate, and we can look into the future, and, you know, we're all kind of skipping and going along together. I mean, nothing in life is ever going to be 100% perfect. But if you take the time, if you do the research, if you look at your resources and you partner with your doctors, your pharmacists, all these different people, partner with them rather than trying to force them to do things, you'll have a really much better outcome than before. And I said, that's how NHI originally got started. The government may have taken an approach of this is what we want to do, but they quickly realized that if they took a different approach, if they partnered with the physicians, if they created a comprehensive plan that was, could be taken on by all those involved. And initially, you know, there was some people who was like, I don't know, we'll watch and see. But they were allowed to have the opportunity to let their program develop because of that type of involvement from all those involved. And so we are talking about taking that type of approach, which is an intellectual and progressive approach. And it's an old saying, actually, you catch more flies with honey, I think everything sometime in this country can be very aggressively done as an oppressive way of doing things. You have to do this. This is what we're going to do. You're going to do whatever like that. But a lot of times, if you partner with people, if you give people incentives, if you make something palatable that we all can participate in, and we don't feel like our futures are going to be crumbling or crushed, then people will have a lot different approach. I really don't know why in such a small country any leadership would want to take an approach where they would force an idea on any community, because the community is so small, so you need each and every individual to be on board. And if the idea is good, it can only get better with opening up the discussion to more people with different perspectives. My perspective may not be the same as this other person's perspective, but together we may find the right view, the even and balanced approach that can work with everyone. And by doing that, we can create the type of long-lasting solutions that take our country to another level. It may take a level of maturity, and so we're asking you to be mature. Be mature in your approach, be mature in your consultation, and be understanding of people and their different point of views and their perspective on life, depending on where they are. Because you can't ask me to give up something by force and expect me to be happy with it. I'm going to be kicking and screaming all along the way. And so it is a call for a better dynamic of cooperation. It is a call for an improved level of communication. And by doing these things, I think we can achieve something really, really amazing, because there are a lot of intelligent people in Bahamas. All right. It's not a few people who are in leadership or whoever like that. That's not the scope and breadth of the country. Include us, involve us. And you will find that you may come up with solutions that you didn't know exist that solve all your problems and make things a lot simpler. You know, there are usually a simple solution to most intricate problems. You just need the point of view in order to see it. You have to open your eyes sometimes and take a step back and realize that, you know, you need other people. You need other people's perspective. And you don't want to be a bully. You don't want to be a bully in the system and not a system like this, because you need specialized hands to be involved in something like this. You're not picking people up off the street. You want specialized hands to be in. And I think there's been quite a disrespect for doctors for such good time. So you don't, not just your friends and your confidants who are around you, open that circle up. Open it up. So that persons like myself can be involved, because we don't have a grudge against any leadership at all, very neutral. So we want to see an open hand extended so that we can provide support for you. And I think that's what everybody's kind of saying in all of these different situations, whether it be the pharmaceutical association, the retailers, the doctors, are all saying, hey, look, let's talk about this, let's put it on the table, and let's see what we can do, because we know the country is in a very strange position, and we know that things are very pressured right now. So I think I didn't take a break. I just talk. So we're going to take a quick break. And if we want to call in, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-325-4259, 325-4316, 325-6232. I'm here with the doctors and with me, Dr. D. Archer. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it'll go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
The Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Janothra Archer Cartwright, family medicine specialist here on the Doctor's Inn, Guardian 96.9 FM. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259 for any other comments or questions. If you want to support the show or you want to book a spot, you can call Guardian Radio 302-2300. This is our new time at 6:30. We're going 6:30 to 7:30 from now on. That's where the show is going to be. I want to thank all of you tonight for listening. We got into a really interesting topic. I guess I'm going to have to do my respiratory illnesses part two next week. But we had some really interesting things that were happening in the community in terms of healthcare and new policies are coming about and new acts that are being placed on there. And we all should be good citizens and look them up, take a read and find out what it's all about. And so you can form a informed position for yourself so that you can have an understanding of the direction that the country is going. Healthcare is extremely, extremely important. And as we can see, the Bahamas, even with this crisis, with everything that happened in the last 2 years, we saw the importance of having a healthy healthcare system, a structure that could take on challenges if they were to occur. And we've realized there have been a lot of gaps in our system for the past few years. And I applaud any leadership that tries to improve that system and to make that better. And so it all is not lost. What it means is that we are all trying to get to the same place. We're trying to improve healthcare in the Bahamas. We want to see healthier Bahamians. We want them to have access to healthcare and state-of-the-art technology that we're seeing in other places. That's really what we want. And, you know, my dream is to see that come and to create the type of access and affordability that people can really take. And that takes a lot of teamwork. That takes all of us coming together and finding the best solution to a problem like this. Is it universal healthcare that's going to solve it? Who knows? Is it NHI? Is it some other program that's going to do it? Is it reinvesting in our current healthcare structure? Is it going out and getting value in different areas from different people? All of this must be done in a very, multidisciplinary approach in which we gather all of our heads together to formulate the best way and the best outcome for all of our Bahamians. Let's not rush headfirst into a system that may not be the best way forward, but let's consult our stakeholders accordingly, and let's all get on board to create the type of system that we would all be proud of. Wouldn't we love that? Wouldn't we love a healthcare system that we can be proud of, that we can walk into, and we're proud when we talk about it? We are the jewel of both the Caribbean and the Western world. We can do that. The Bahamas is great. We have a lot of smart people. We can top innovation. We can be at the pinnacle of medical success. And we can turn around the health of the nation within a generation if we would take the time to have long-term goals, to have a national healthcare plan, and something that goes beyond politics, that goes beyond who's in and who's friend or whatever, but something that's going to leave the Bahamas in a better place, and we can look back, just as, NIB and all these other things have been, things that are important. We can look back and say, wow, we did that. We were a part of that era. We put that together. And that's what you really want. You want a legacy of positive steps towards the outcomes and goals that will change the nation in a better way. Now, I don't think anyone out there wants a negative impact on healthcare. But we understand that a lot of things that are just done or rushed or done because a small grouping of people make that decision, sometimes are not always the things that are practical for everyone else. And so I hope this has enlightened all of you and made you think about what's happening in healthcare. Reach out to your people, your representative, and ask them what exactly is going on. Speak to your doctor about it. Speak to your pharmacist about it. Because sometimes we look at things from just our point of view and we have no idea what's really happening. And so we all are informed, we make better decisions. We've got one more comment before we go. Since yes, definitely, but we need a Freedom of Information Act. Yes, those are one of the things that we've been calling for. Sadly, it hasn't been introduced as yet, but one day, I feel like one day we're going to be in that place in the country where we have these things open and freely. We just have to keep pushing. Be a good citizen, be involved. I always encourage that. Don't just be a doctor or lawyer or pharmacist. Be involved with the things, or a business person or an employee or a cashier or a teacher. Be involved with what's happening in your country. Lend your voice to the conversation. And that is how we get to figure out some things and read, find on these things. Information is such key. Because to speak on something without having the information that you need to make good decisions and comments that make sense, it's not going to lend to the conversation, but to take us back. But if we all take ourselves up a level and just try to have an understanding at whatever level you can, because we're all at different levels when it comes to this type of stuff. But if you learn a little bit for yourself, it'll make it easier. The next time you ask a question, people will be able to answer you more appropriately. And so be good citizens, do your part, find out what's going on, and yes, lend your voice to the conversation. So I want to thank everybody for listening to our inaugural show at 6:30 p.m. on The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. D. I'm going to see you next week, same time, same place, Guardian Radio 96.9, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. Good night.